Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pixel Chicken Team Up. I'm your host, Stryker.
And I am Philip.
Self-introductions! I'm Johnny! Shit!
So, we are ready to provide some news.
Yes.
Feels like it's been a while, but it really hasn't.
It hasn't.
How are you? How have you been doing? And what the fuck?
What the fuck?
You answer those questions.
Good. I am enjoying this summer. I have been awoken to a whole new world yesterday. I found out that you can actually put different kinds of sauces on pizza other than just tomato. And that's amazing.
So what kind of sauce are we talking
about? There's garlic and olive oil, mm-hmm. Pesto. This is butter oil. It's awesome. You can go to like the place
and barbecue sauce.
That's what a cool! I can try that. I'm totally into that. I will try that.
So you have not had this. This world is this is new to you.
This is new to me. Wow. I never knew this.
You've never had. You've never had a pizza with like a garlic sauce or
no? But I love it with garlic sauce more so than tomato.
I'm going to tell you something. I feel like maybe you have at one point and not realized it, like just not like ate it, not thinking about what was on.
That might be the case
because there's a lot of you may have even had it at like my place because there was a pizza we used to get. My parents used to get pretty frequently that had a garlic sauce, and I feel like most of my friends that
went I probably had it, yeah. But I'm sure I thought it was really good because cool. It's amazing.
Well, I'm with you on that one.
Beat Arkham Knight and found out that I had to complete all the Riddler challenges in order to find out the other half of the...
Just watch it. I did it. Just watch it.
On YouTube?
Just watch it on YouTube.
Okay. You know, I'm just going to do that.
Just do it.
I was fine with the race courses, but I don't want to find all those fucking trophies.
Just watch it online, man.
Awesome.
So then my third question was, what the fuck?
What the fuck? Fuck, that's what.
Okay. That's fair. Johnny?
I'm doing good. I'm watching classic films. That's pretty much...
Well, what classic films do you watch?
I went on IMDb and I searched the top-rated Western films.
All right.
I like how you came about this.
I just Googled Western...
It's inspired me.
...top-rated. And I looked at the ones that I haven't seen that are really good because I consider myself a big fan of Westerns. And I'm like, well, there's a lot of big movies here I haven't seen. So I've since I downloaded like 9 movies. But I've since watched in the last, like, 4 days, Treasure of the Sierra Madre, Rio Bravo, and The Searchers.
Mm. I started watching Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and it wasn't... It's very, very witty and charming.
Yeah. It's also very lighthearted.
It's by the writer who did The Princess Bride.
Oh, I didn't know that. The director that did The Sting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That movie's like a dream team, and it's amazing. And I didn't expect... I just thought it was another Western, and I went to it blind, and I was like, oh, this is like the Western Sting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's got like it's like funny and parts, and you're like, what is this?
And the ending is fucking incredible.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. Yeah. I can't wait to finish it. I'm halfway through the movie.
The ending is infamous for being really, really well done. Well, cool. I'm glad to hear it. Did you want to talk more about your Westerns?
They're all real good.
All real good.
I didn't know that the Treasure of the Sierra Madre guy and the guy who did the Maltese Falcon also did Chinatown. In fact, if you think about it, he kind of invented that noir investigator genre with the Maltese Falcon as his first movie. And one of his last movies was him reinventing the wheel he created by doing Chinatown.
You know, I can't always say this, and I have to, because it makes me feel cool. I've read the book, The Maltese Falcon, and I have not seen the movie.
But first of all, speaking of Chinatown, I couldn't help but make this comparison, judging by the endings, but you guys have got to watch The Most Wanted.
I'm going to. Yeah. If you spoil it for me, I will cut your lips off.
I'm not
going
to spoil it for you.
I will cut your lips off and sew them to your eyebrows.
John le Carré, the same guy that wrote the George Smiley novels, he wrote the book that this is based off of. Mm-hmm. And, man, Philip Seymour Hoffman's great. And that's
always.
Always been.
What movie?
A Most Wanted Man.
Never heard of it.
Great. Oh, no. It's going to be a quality film you fucking watch.
I remember seeing it and thinking from the very beginning that it looked great. By the way, the threat that I just gave you... was something that I heard one of my friend's moms say to them when I was a kid, and it stuck with me for years.
Wait.
She said, She said, "Boy, I'm gonna cut your lips off and sew them to your eyebrows."
Jeez.
And I was like,
"Is it when I was a kid, I was like, with?"
No, it was from middle school.
I'm gonna be that dad that just like says the worst things to his kid when his friends are over just to scare the shit out of his friends.
Hold on a second. John Huston, director of the Maltese Falcon, was the piece of shit guy from Chinatown, the actor.
Which piece of shit guy?
He's Hollis Mulray.
He acts in like all of his movies.
You mean the guy whose wife cheated on him?
Yeah, the guy.
Wait, the Adrian's brother?
Yeah,
from Rocky.
Yeah, the old man, right?
Yeah, the old man from Chinatown. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Directed the Maltese Falcon. Basically, is that what you were talking about?
So yeah, this guy, he's a genius. He's a fantastic director. And I didn't really think about it.
I didn't know that.
So in Treasure of the Sierra Madre, one of the main characters is his dad, who's this adorable old man, who's like a very real actor. But yeah, John Huston's dad was one of the main characters acting in this movie, and like some of the Huston family like shows up in like tons of movies that he's done, and then including himself, and he's done like 40 movies.
That's pretty cool. So he goes from directing an amazing critical masterpiece to acting in one.
Yeah, and he
when he's older,
he's kind of like Hitchcock,
even though he's a piece of shit in the movie. Sorry. Anyway.
He's kind of like Hitchcock in that he just jumps across all genres and does them well and stuff. So.
Only instead of Hitchcock, he actually just acts and not always just directs and acts, right? Because he didn't obviously direct Chinatown, he just acted it.
No, John Huston. John Huston?
Yeah, the actor.
Did, wrote, and directed Chinatown.
That is wrong.
No. What?
Roman Polanski directed Chinatown.
Fucking... And it was
written by Robert Town, who also wrote... One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, I fucked up.
It's okay. It happens.
I thought I found a fun fact.
Well, you found a fun fact that he acted in Chinatown and...
I saw his name when I was on his page, and I was like, oh, wow, and I must have been on the acting page. Speaking of movies, I saw Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about that now?
Yeah, don't give away any spoilers.
I'm not going to.
I've seen it yet.
Okay, but do you know about the cameo that's in it?
Do you know about who dies at the end?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I'll just like say that there is a kind of a bigger superhero cameo in the movie, but the thing that it felt really genuine to me. I've been wanting to talk about this.
That's the only part of the movie I didn't like.
I thought it was fine. I thought it was genuine. You have to understand that
super forced, but
it was not forced.
It was
no, it wasn't. It you was, have these characters exist in the same universe. Why not? It wasn't foreshadowing.
It didn't have anything to do with this movie.
No, it had to do with his final test.
Like,
okay, yeah. You're gonna make Phil give away a spoiler, and it, just by
no. See, listen. Well, years ago, you couldn't ever have Hulk. You would never say have. Nobody ever really thought they would see the Incredible Hulk face to face with, say, Spider-Man, because Hulk was under Universal, Spider-Man was under Sony. That's possible now. You know, it's possible to see Ant-Man with this character.
And see, that's what I saw in this cameo was that I mean, it was just one of the Avengers. But like they're like needlessly in the movie just because Avengers fan service. Like it's fine. It was fun. It was it was a fun scene, but it was a little corny, I felt, and it felt forced. It's like this is Ant-Man. Like it's a new thing. It's not like we've seen him with the Avengers before, and then they're just casually at one point, just for the heck of it, just name dropping Tony Stark. And talking about the event, why don't you just have the Avengers do it? Like, they're assuming that the viewer has watched the previous Marvel
films. No, why not just have the Avengers do it? They address it.
Yeah, they address it, but what does that have to do with Ant-Man? What does it have to do with this plot, because, these characters in this
because
movie?
Because why doesn't Ant-Man just call the Avengers? You know, that one douchebag is like, well, why don't they just call the Avengers? They address that.
Well, they usually don't show up with the Avengers until, like, the after-credits scene where they have some Avengers character come and recruit them, or they have some, you know, some silly thing. That I'm fine with, but this was like halfway through the movie, it's like they're just Avengers stuff. And it's like, and it wasn't like it was an important scene, it was just kind of like, the Avengers are here, but it wasn't like, it wasn't a huge complaint, but it was, I thought that was a forced scene. I'm not the only one with that opinion, I've read it online, but I'll go online, therefore. It's true.
Pretty genuine scene, and I thought it really worked. No, I'm just fucking with you, dude. I respect you. But I liked it, and I think that I thought that that was actually kind of an important scene.
I will say with this,
Michael Douglas going, yeah, they just like to drop you know, cities on the Earth.
Yeah,
I thought it was fun.
It's that's fun and that's fan service to me. That's a fan service reference. That's just like
but
remember that movie, the blockbuster that you just saw 2 months ago?
No,
let's reference not the to ending. Me.
I thought no, this it's a part of the world. Of course, like Michael Douglas's character is going to have an opinion about it.
Are you? Yeah, can I ask you this? Are you saying that there's something inherently wrong with that kind of stuff? Like just
the fact it doesn't have anything to do with Ant-Man. Ant-Man's like his own thing at the moment. It hasn't connected itself yet. But then out of nowhere, Michael Douglas in the movie is just like, remember the end of the Avengers? Like,
he didn't say remember the end of the Avengers.
He said
he was explaining the Avengers why he had a problem. He was explaining why he was he said it much in a much more witty way than that.
What does that have to do with Ant-Man and these characters?
What does it have to do with Ant-Man and these characters? The fact that they're a part of this. Why did they what the hell?
Phil, settle down.
I legit pissed off Phil. We did it, Stryker. We did it.
No, seriously. Why is it even a problem? What does this have to do with Ant-Man and his characters? It has because it's justification for this adventure. It creates this. It's not.
Yeah, but I'm talking. So that's a universal story as a whole.
That they just briefly. They just briefly mentioned the Avengers, though. But it's not that much of a problem.
No, it isn't. Movies are their own piece. They're their own sub-story, and everything in it is self-contained until it connects itself with other stuff. It hadn't done that yet. That's the only reason why I thought it was forced, was because it was like, everybody has watched The Avengers. But if I hadn't watched The Avengers, if I had a blind eye to Marvel stuff, but I was just for some reason an Ant-Man fan, and I went into they start talking about The Avengers and how they're dropping cities.
I think that
it's not
the reason,
a technical sequel.
I think the reason why is because it's foreshadowing what Hank Pym's stance on, you know, whatever's going to go down with the next Captain America movie is going to be.
Yeah,
and that's fine, and it makes sense to me.
So let's talk about the movie. I love the movie. I actually really liked it. But what I liked about it was that it stood alone as a fun movie.
It did.
It was a fun movie. It wasn't. It didn't force action down your throat 24/7. It was like it was a good comedy. It was a good summer blockbuster fun movie. It was everything I want out of a good comic book movie and a Marvel movie.
Was it more in line with like an Iron Man 1?
It was more in line with, I think.
No. Yes and no. In ways.
I think that
it's more comedic.
I think it's about as comedic as Iron Man 3. I just feel like that Ant-Man can be that comedic. You know, you can have it be much more of a comedy.
The difference, I think, is that Iron Man establishes the Marvel franchise. It's like kind of like the baseline piece, whereas mm-hmm. Ant-Man is the weird standoff like series that nobody really knows.
There's that, and there's also the fact that, and that's a good point. But there's also the fact that you know, there's a lot of dark places I feel like the Iron Man movies should go that it doesn't. Whereas Ant-Man, it is pretty open to be lighthearted through and through because it's a guy that can shrink.
Although he was a wife beater in the comics.
Oh, there was that. Yeah, I forgot that at the part. Well, that was Hank Pym.
Yeah, Hank Pym was.
It's
weird.
Yeah, the movie had a serious heart to it. The villain was, you know, two-dimensional, but in a movie, it was a very simple movie. It's not like a movie that I'm going to be like, oh yeah, you gotta see Ant-Man now. It's just, but like...
But that actor was really trying, though.
It was, yeah, they had a good thing going. They had him crying. Really, it was such a simple, down-to-earth, it was a humble movie.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, like, you can't not... like feel that they had a good thing going here with this, and it was surprising, and that's something that I haven't been by Marvel movies, is surprised by anything personally. As somebody who's not a comic book fan, I just don't. There's not much there for me. But for this one, as a movie, it worked. It was fun.
Cool.
And my favorite part about it is that it's 80% not superpowers. Like the microscopic running around is cool because it's not just I have laser beams or super strength or things we've seen before. It's like they go microscopic and the movie's kind of different. Like when they have mm-hmm. like in the trailer when they're fighting on the train set and stuff.
Yeah,
it's cute. It's funny. Like it's
I really want to talk about one of the. It was really hard to enjoy this scene because there are two obnoxious assholes sitting behind me. Well, three of them, and they just wouldn't shut up. But I don't want to spoil it for Stryker. But it's a really cool ass action scene.
And you got ruined by idiots. Did you tell them to be quiet?
I actually turned around. I was like, "You want to talk at a lower octave, man?" And then suddenly the guy was just like, "Sorry," and then he shut up after that.
You know, maybe they were under the influence because that.
Yeah, or maybe
if you're really, I've noticed if people are really apologetic when you call them out on something, that usually means they were drinking. Because you know when you don't realize how obnoxious you are after you've had a few drinks until somebody points it out, and then you're like, "Wow,
you just shit your pants.
I am being shit." So into the news, if that's all right with you guys. You guys doing okay? We need to take this outside.
I think we should hug.
Because we can live stream it.
Yeah, we've reached a lot of common ground in the movie, actually.
Yeah. We guys hug real quick. Just hug it out.
It's okay. It wasn't that bad.
Just touch hands at least.
Can
high five. I'll settle for a high five.
Woo!
Like that?
Come on. You got to look at the elbow.
Shut!
There we go.
Yeah.
That hurt.
All right. So into news, the first thing I wanted to talk about was a passing that we had. It was actually, I don't remember exactly what day we found out about it, but Satoru Iwata, Nintendo's headmaster, he sadly passed away last week. So I just wanted to touch on that. And
my understanding of him was that he wasn't just a businessman who worked in the industry. He was a legitimate programmer.
Absolutely. He came from a gaming background.
His famous quote in 2005 was, he said something like, on my business card, I'm a CEO or president. In my degree path, I'm a programmer, but in my heart, I'm a gamer. Because that's always been his life. He really played games, even all throughout. He had a big passion for it, and it showed. Their business decisions showed that all these old guys play games.
Supposedly, he had a lot of input into certain things getting done that maybe wouldn't have with another CEO who was solely focused on financial things. Like the Earthbound series, he had a part in reviving it to a certain extent, or bringing it to other platforms. I don't know if it was in the form of like virtual console releases or something like that, but he's had a hand in that. And
no mobile for Nintendo. How he didn't want Nintendo characters to be on like mobile, like phone stuff, as well as that would have sold. He didn't want to bastardize the image with cell phone stuff when they have their own handheld platform for it. So, yeah, that's what's kind of kept Nintendo feeling like entirely first party all this time.
Mm-hmm.
He's basically, I don't know if he's the creator of or if he just heavily worked on, but his franchises were Earthbound and Kirby. That's where he got his start. And those are both obviously excellent. I think he might have been the director. I think that's like where he got his start at Nintendo. That was incredibly sad news.
I've heard people say that he had health issues, and that's why he skipped out on the last couple of E3s. But it seemed like it kind of caught people off guard, like it came out of nowhere to a certain extent.
Miyamoto said that he had just been talking with him like days before, and things seemed fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it just got really bad. And they were working on him. There was a procedure, and he died during it. Maybe some issue with the drugs they were giving him or something. But, because that does happen a lot. That's how the guy at Rooster Teeth died earlier this year. He had an allergic reaction to something, and they gave him some medicine he was allergic to, and it killed him. So,
jeez. Yeah, so that's unfortunate. I just wanted to touch on that and say rest in peace and give our condolences.
Mm-hmm.
It's never good when somebody that has, one of the pioneers of the industry passes away.
To leave a lot behind, though.
Yeah, not only did he do a lot. I mean, there have been times where, big names have died, and I feel kind of bad. because I respect them, but he was different because, like, he's one of the few people that could die in the game industry that make me go, like, oh, no. Like, that actually affects
that's a lot how I felt.
He's a figurehead.
That's like, how I felt when Harold Ramis died. The guy who played Egon, who wrote Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it's...
I'm not familiar.
Oh, okay. Well,
anyway. I've seen Ghostbusters, but I don't remember.
The guy who played Egon actually co-wrote the movie with Dan Aykroyd, and he's also responsible for these other comedies like Groundhog Day. And, but anyway.
Yeah, I know it does have
What about Bob?
I don't think so. I think he may have played some kind of part in it, but I don't think he directed or wrote it.
Groundhog Day is an excellent movie.
I love that movie. So moving on to more to mother news, to actually some negative news. I wanted to touch on...
it's still better than this news.
It's still better than this news. I wanted to touch on this interview with a certain Randy Pitchford, who is the CEO of Gearbox.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's pretty well known in the industry. I mean, he's pretty active with press and in the gaming community and stuff, everybody's familiar with the fiasco that was the release of Alien Colonial Marines. We don't even need to go into that, but and we wouldn't have had to touch on it at all if he didn't bring it up or touch on it in this interview that he came out with last week. I don't know who the interview was for, but I came away from this interview kind of pissed off, to summarize how I felt after reading it. And in my estimation, he was very, very dodgy with the responsibility of the negative reception that Alien Colonial Marines received. He not only that, but he seemed to completely disrespect and put down the people that were negative against it, that didn't like the game.
Can I quote something?
Yeah, please do.
So, quote, I understand that there are some... This is according to this gentleman we were talking about. I understand that there are some people that didn't enjoy it, and I'm very sorry about that. That's the nature of entertainment. Some of my favorite bands who've made some of the songs I think are the best in the world have other songs on B-sides that I completely don't care for. It's going to happen, so I don't know what to say. I understand that there's some people that didn't enjoy it.
Can I read another quote from here?
Go if for you don't it. Mind? Just go for
so
it.
So this is the quote here that pissed me off.
Which
the most.
People surprisingly aren't talking much about.
Yeah.
Because this is the quote that was my boiling point.
Yeah, this quote I was reading through this and I was already kinda like, geez, this guy, like, really? Or this is how you approach the reception? And then I got down here to let me try and find it. All right, so here's the quote that I didn't like. So he says in here, quote, "There is always the person who's got to stand on the sandcastle. They must crush it," he said. "That's their way of relating to that. It's typically a less sophisticated mind. There's a dark part of all of us that likes the idea of crushing a sandcastle, but most of us will respect it and let it be. That's why we like playing video games, where we can blow stuff up and no one gets hurt." So he's equating the negative reception and the backlash to this game to people just liking to put things down and destroy them. And not only that, he also says that that's a less sophisticated mind. That's
but
literally
the problem
what he
is,
says.
This is a legitimately, widely, critically bashed game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not the game that... It wasn't like a polarizing game. People had negative opinions on it. That's like the average response to this game. So, and then not only that, but to call these people that feel that way a less sophisticated mind, like these people, they just want to destroy things and say... No. Why would they target your game specifically because they just want to destroy it? You think you just got unlucky and people just decided, you know, that Alien Colonial Marines is a really good game, but I don't like it. I want to destroy something today.
Yeah. He's basically just saying anybody who talks down to this game is an ignoramus. Don't listen to the bad press people. But what doesn't make any fucking sense is that this is so long after the fact. The game came out like 2 years ago? Or what, a year
something
now?
Something like that.
Everybody knows
he's not
bad.
Making more money off the piece of shit. He said he lost 10 to 15 million. And he's whining like a baby and saying, it's not my fault. It was fine. It was really, it was just the dumbs. The dumb people. That's who it was. If you thought that, you're dumb.
Well, think of all the people that lost their $60 that amount of money.
And he's bitching about his 10 to 15 mil. My cousin George lost 60 bucks.
So, yeah, that I mean, it was just incredibly delusional.
Yeah,
he
sounded like a crazy person. He was going off and fucking like ranting about like how people put together 9/11 videos and like what?
What are you talking about?
Anybody listening to this, go read the Andy Pitchford interview because it's full of fucking crazy, and it goes on for a long time. He just keeps rambling and just like it's the longest CEO cop out and the most unprofessional thing I have read from someone in this field ever. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this.
I mean,
coming from like the US.
You have like the big companies that just off the top of my head like Ubisoft and EA and stuff that get so much backlash about certain releases. But they come out and they you know, Peter Moore, I remember him releasing the statement after they got, like, the worst company in America thing. And he was like, you know, we're going to do better. We don't want it to be this way. We will do better. And just, that's all he said. It was simple, to the point. We're going to be better. We don't want to be that looked at negatively. You know, Ubisoft, they come out after the debacle that was Assassin's Creed, and they say we're making changes to our QA process, we're sorry, blah blah blah, and then he comes out 2 years after the fact and just completely places the blame on his consumers, the people that paid money to play this game. Like, the people that bought the game are the people that played it in most cases. I mean, you know, rental services and stuff aren't making you money that much these days. So the people that he's disrespecting are the people that bought into the bullshit that was this game. You know what I mean? And that's, and you know, maybe some people out there really like this game, and that's cool. I'm not saying that you're dumb for liking it for what it was. But I know that the majority of people bought this game thinking it was going to be this way and then got a game that they were very disappointed in. And he's disrespecting those people and basically saying they just want to destroy something. They're sadists.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't like Gearbox. I used to like Gearbox. I thought everybody liked Gearbox. They were like the kind of the fan favorite studio formed just on, they were kind of like a CD Projekt back in the day. They were formed on like nothing. They made Half-Life 1 expansions and expansion packs. Like, they were kind of like Obsidian, but they didn't even make full games. They were just handed little projects. And they did good on them. So, like, for a long time, they had very positive press. And then Borderlands really set it in stone for them. But freaking Duke Nukem, and then this. He is responsible for two of the best-selling AAA critical failures in the last, like, you know, 5 years. Like, because Duke Nukem and Alien, like, while they didn't sell what they wanted, they sold, like, AAA titles, and they were shit. Yeah. Most companies have better quality control than those two games. Those games were just disasters for what they brought in. That means that a lot of people blew money on a game and thought, like, the average person who doesn't even know much about what a good game is picked up one of those two games and thought, this is utter shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that piece of news makes this piece of news really hard. Like, it really just makes it bittersweet. And that piece of news is that he said that they're in early stages of talking about a true Brothers in Arms sequel. And I, for one, I was a big Brothers in Arms fan. I love World War II shooters. Mm-hmm. I love World War II history in general.
Yeah.
So Brothers in Arms is a really cool series. I've always really liked it. And I've wanted a new one since I played Hell's Highway. And so that piece of news, normally I would be like, that's awesome, I'd be ecstatic. But I read that like 2 days after I read this interview, and I'm like, well, that's cool, but fuck Gearbox.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, because there's so many other people involved that make these games and that are putting hours and hours into it. But when you read that kind of interview from the CEO, it's hard not to have a negative opinion immediately afterwards. And so I just felt kind of negative towards him after that. But other than that, in a vacuum, a new Brothers in Arms title is a great thing to hear for me personally. So
should this game turn out to be really good, would this make you... Well, I don't know. This is probably...
If the game's good, the game's good. You know, I'm not saying that they can't put out quality games. I'm saying that their CEO is a delusional asshole.
More than fair.
From this interview.
More than fair.
And there's something wrong in that company to have quality control that bad. And I don't know if he's the only problem, because they do have good people there. But, yeah. I don't know. Gearbox could have easily... They were in a position to really take off, and they blew it so hard that it's really surprising. I didn't expect for them to have failures at all, because I just thought so highly of them for so long. But
yeah. And I'm from that interview, like I said, I'm not willing to just say, you know, I'm never going to buy a Gearbox title and Gearbox sucks and this and that. But because there's so many, like, people that you're... You know, that you would be generalizing by saying that work so hard on these games. And I mean, he's a CEO. He's not in the trenches, you know, working overnights and stuff, developing these games and working on code and stuff, most likely. Well,
I think that's his background, though.
And in fact, I'm positive that's where he comes from.
Yeah.
But I do think that I have a negative opinion on him specifically. Personally, from reading this, and you know, I'm sure he can rectify that if he comes out and says, "Hey, I was, you know, working on No Sleep, and I'm sorry, I was an asshole." You know, just come out and be a normal human about it, and not disrespect so many people all at once. But as of now, I have a hard time. I don't know. I have a hard time being positive about something coming right after that. Because it was another interview with him that this news came from. So, anyway, that's how I felt about it. In other news, Arkham Knight on PC is still... It's had, I think, one patch released since it actually came out. And it was just a kind of a patch to turn on a few features. And then there's another bigger one, I think, that came out last week. But a report came out from, like, some leaked emails or something that said that the game won't be fixed until September. And I just thought that was just incredible in this day and age for a game to be released and then not be in a condition where it can be sold again. Mm-hmm. Until, let's see, so it released June, so July, August, so almost 4 months later, it won't be sold again, possibly, until 4 months after it was originally released. I just can't. That one, it just boggles my mind. Like, how does that happen? Like, I'm not even, like, that mad about it, because I played the game on PS4 and I loved it, but it's just more, like... I don't get it. Like, it's just a mystery to me that could happen in this day and age with a AAA title of that magnitude. I mean, this isn't like a indie title that they don't like know what they're doing and stuff. This has got millions of dollars. You know, I just
it's baffling.
It is. It's like I'm speechless just thinking about it.
They fucked up.
Yeah, they really did. Mm-hmm. I just wonder how they will, you have to think that there's got to be some incentive once this game finally is released on PC for people, like the season pass is free or something like that. I mean, they've got to make up some ground because they lost a lot of confidence from consumers because of this debacle. So
that being said, we both, you and Stryker, you and me both, we've beat Arkham Knight. And what did you think of the ending?
Okay, didn't we talk about this?
We did.
The ending?
Yeah, I talked about it. I thought it was cool.
All right, cool. Yeah, one last thing. I just want to... I like the fact that I believe that you start off the game with abilities that you eventually earn throughout Arkham City. Right. And you can already do a bunch of stuff with Batman. And, you know, you just keep getting more and more cool stuff to do with him as the game goes on. And I found that really enjoyable. So,
yeah, it was a good game. Johnny, you wanted to talk a little bit... So we have, like, two Kickstarter campaigns to talk about. One one ended on a very great note. One is less likely for that to happen. So if you want to touch on those.
Right, and it's pretty much just continuations of what we've been talking about past episodes. Red Ash and Shenmue 3. Shenmue 3...
Opposite ends of the spectrum.
Total opposite. So, yeah. Red Ash is currently basically where it was last episode, which we recorded over a week ago. That was like 8 or 9 days.
Nearly a week and a half, yeah.
So, like, it's not even... It's basically halfway, but I don't even think it's quite halfway yet. People don't want the damn thing. And there's all sorts... There's like a $10,000, you know, backer bonus on there, I see, to, like, have dinner with the team in Japan, with Keiji Inafune. And I'm just thinking, $10,000, no flight included. There's 10 of those available. And of course nobody's fucking bought one.
Yeah.
Because that would be like half the game's backers. Like, yeah, it's shit. And oh, to get a physical copy of the game, you have to spend like $69 or $89. To get a physical copy of the fucking Red Ash game, you have to spend the $89 Kickstarter.
Whose idea was that?
Yeah.
That's more than a game is
like, you can wait for the damn garbage to come out and like, just buy. And there's no incentive to own this game at all. It is literally nothing other than the people making it. And the people making it are washed up. Like, there is... It's not a franchise people want to see continue. It's nothing. There's not even gameplay. Like, they're like, oh, wait, nobody's buying this. Quick, release a concept art. And they released one concept art that looked okay. So, yeah, that's going to be a failure. And part of me hopes it doesn't succeed, because I hope that Mighty No. 9 really blows up and just like, what the hell happened kind of a thing. Because so far it hasn't. So far, like, I'm the one that's... You probably hear the most negativity about that. Like, you hear a lot of things on the internet, but just look at it. It's terrible. Anyways, Shenmue 3. $6.3 million it ended. Yes. Highest grossing Kickstarter game ever. As soon as it hit 5.4 million, it passed the number one.
Wow. Which is awesome, because I don't know if you guys remember from one of our previous episodes, or if you're following the Kickstarter campaign, the 5 million point was specifically where Yu Suzuki said that he would like to be for specific reasons as far as the game goes.
Yeah.
Certain things he wants to add and stuff, so...
2 million's what he needs, 5 million's what he wants, and 10 million is what he really wants. Or, I think it's more like 2 million's what could maybe make it work, 5 million's what he needs, and 10 million's what he wants. But he's got 6.3, which is good. I think that means we're going to get a good Shenmue game. I mean, people are like, but the old one cost $50 million. It's like, yeah, but think about back then, what it costs to do a 3D game at all with voice acting. That's all the money. Now it's nothing. Right. And it doesn't look like they've adapted much. It's probably going to have the same Virtua Fighter engine. It's probably just going to be, you know, the same kind of thing, but on Unreal 4.
I mean, you had to build everything from the ground up back then.
Yeah.
Everything.
Now they just slap some models in a map and they get some shitty voice actors, because it seems like they're going to stick with that. That costs nothing. So, yeah, I mean, they could pull it off with $6 million, no problem. It's basically an indie game at this point. So I'm super excited. And I was thinking about it. I'm probably going to get the most out of Shenmue 3. As one of the backers, out of like any of these fans, because I'm going to, like, play them, and I have enough time to beat them for the first time and not have any nostalgia towards the series, so be totally in, just in the zone by the time the third one comes out for the janky controls and the cheesy-ass everything, and the story's going to be super fresh in my mind because, like, for, I'll have experienced it just now for the first time, and I know I'm going to like it. So, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
You're in a good place.
I'm in a good spot to be a
what if, how Shenmue would you be disappointed if they weren't janky controls anymore, but they were really
they're
good?
Really good, tight controls.
I'd be like, this fuck! This is Shenmue!
So I wanted to talk about, so we have a few fighting game things. So Evo happened this last weekend.
See.
Do you, Phil, did you get to watch any Evo?
No, I didn't get to watch any Evo.
Johnny, I know you did.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, there were some sweet fights. Yeah, some good stuff. Mortal Kombat X was fun to watch. There's Killer Instinct and Street Fighter Four, Super Smash Brothers, and then there were some other things I watched that were not on like the main floor. But it was cool. Evo is always fun to watch for me. It's fun to see guys like that were, you know, in last year's tournament come back and change things up, and some newcomers and old guys like Justin Wong and everything who wasn't in the top eight for like any game for the first time ever.
Is it really fun to watch these competitions?
It is, I think so. I mean, maybe not for everybody, but it's just, you know, it's fun to see people that are so, that understand the game to such a deep level compete against each other. So on to other fighting news. At Evo, there was a Street Fighter V panel. And, damn it, Phil.
We're not plugging DeVry. They haven't paid us yet.
There was a
Bill's on the way, DeVry.
A Street Fighter V panel where they went into great detail about the system for basically how the game is going to work at launch. With regards to updates, with regards to the system for purchasing DLC. Mm-hmm. And they also talked a bit about how they are approaching the gameplay and character design and stuff like that. So I wanted to touch on those things. And starting with the one that probably made the most, got the most attention, which is the DLC and sort of pay structure that they're using. Basically the way it works, I don't know if you've read much about it, Phil, but basically the way it works is that, you know, you buy your Street Fighter V disc, and mm-hmm. we talked about this before, it's the only disc you'll ever need. All sure. updates and everything that happens will be released, and you can purchase them, and, you know, it can be added to the game you already have. You don't have to buy another Street Fighter V down the road. With regards to characters that they release, they're going to do like regular releases of characters, sort of like a it sounded like more of like a Killer Instinct approach. Mm-hmm. So you get the base game has launches with 16 characters.
Good.
But then post-launch characters, like DLC characters that are released, you can buy them by using the in-game currency that you earn by playing the game. So every character that's released after the fact, you can purchase potentially by just playing the game. You can also buy the in-game currency with real-world dollars.
Okay.
And buy the characters that way.
I'm glad that I'm glad they don't just say you gotta buy this. There's other ways you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
They leave you options, and that's really cool of them to do.
I think this is fucking sweet. It definitely gives you the incentive, I guess, a gameplay standpoint. It gives you a goal to keep fighting for, to keep wanting to unlock things. And as I was talking to Stryker earlier about this, like, you buy the ones you want as they come out, and the ones you kind of want or don't really want, you just kind of work to unlock.
Mm-hmm.
You constantly have something you're working towards. And
It gives you a reason to keep playing it.
Especially mm-hmm. if you can still fight against these characters online. It's like, mm-hmm. I'm not always going to want to pay for fucking Squirrel Girl number 2, Blaze Blue. Fuck you. Sorry. dark memories there. But, like, this is a good platform because you could fight against the ones that you don't want to pay for. But you still get the main cast when you buy the game. So it's better than Killer Instinct. To me, this sounds like the ultimate way to do it. Because I love so unlocks in a fighting game.
And you the game launches, you get a ton of characters to start off with. You don't launch with two characters and then have to buy the rest. You get a full game's worth of content.
It makes me happy.
And then you can do, like Johnny and I were talking about earlier. So say, you know, four characters have released a few months go by and you got one character you really want.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you buy that character with real world money if you want and then play the game a bunch and you get a certain amount of the in-game currency, and then you use it to buy the other characters that maybe you don't want as much. So, like he said, you always have something that you're working towards, and I really like that system.
Pretty decent quality control.
It especially feels good when you're playing a game and you're getting stuff that you have to buy for free by playing it. It makes you feel kind of like you got a good deal. You're just like, ooh, free.
Yeah.
I just saved $5 by buying this character I'd never buy.
Exactly. I think it's the perfect system. And who would have thought such a great system would come from Capcom? Mm-hmm.
I know. Exactly. They've done it all wrong, and then all of a sudden... Yeah, they're going to pull a Kojima and fire the Street Fighter team as soon as they release this game.
God, the one team that just is, like, untouchable. So on to other news with regards to Street Fighter V. So they announced that. Another thing that I thought was cool, they talked a bit about how they're approaching the character differentiating, you know, whether it's and just character design in general. So actual physical design of the characters, they talked about how they want characters to look and feel different, you know, and be influenced by the story of the characters, which is cool for me as a fan because I've always liked, you know, the little silly story, even if they're ridiculous and stuff. I've liked the story and the canon of the Street Fighter games.
It's interesting.
And
it's fun.
It is interesting. And for the most part, the characters just have not evolved that much over the years, if at all. You know, their stories change and stuff like that, but they always remain the same. They look the same. They act the same. Same moves and everything like that. You know, with some added variations to that. And they said they want to get away from that and make every character feel different and look different too, and evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, each character has their own like ability, so they don't have like one universal ability like a focus attack in Street Fighter 4. Every character has a different ability, you know, different things, like, you know, that you can enhance your strength for a certain period of time, or Ryu can parry attacks like Street Fighter 3. I can't remember what Charlie's is, but different things like that. And so I really like that. They also showed like some concept art of some of the design choices for the characters, and you know, you can see it with like Ken that he looks a bit different. And so I'm really excited for it. I everything that I could ever want in a Street Fighter V game, it seems like is coming true. The only thing I can ask from this point out is for certain characters to
they're still not changing Zangief's name to Vodka though, right?
That we sucks. Don't know that yet.
They that could. Sucks. I wish that'd be funny as hell.
It
should be his middle name.
I hope for Alex from Street Fighter 3 and Sagat, if those two characters make the main roster. I know they will probably at some point. Then I will be a happy camper. So I'm just excited to see where it goes. I'm excited to see, you know, the character designs and on top of that news, they announced a new character, a brand new character. What is his name, Phil?
God damn it. I just you fucking had it deleted it. I had it and then I didn't.
He's like an Aztec, sort of a tribal-looking warrior. He has crazy long dreadlocks.
Nikali.
He has these crazy long dreadlocks.
Crazy fat.
And his V trigger, or his special ability, I think that's what they're called, is he basically, for all intents and purposes, he turns Super Saiyan. His hair starts glowing red and going in, like in the air, and he gets crazy powerful and fast and can do all these crazy attacks. I watched the video of him, and I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I really like his attacks, like just his style. It's very kind of like visceral and sort of
like animalistic almost. He's like just shredding at people and like grabbing them and slamming them into the ground. It's very, it seems very different. Like
very
he's,
hardcore.
Yeah, very hardcore. And I think he's a cool character. I like the design. I think he's interesting. He's unique. They don't have another character like him.
For Street Fighter.
He looks just like a villain in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah.
In a good way, too.
And to go off of that, he looks like he fits in the Street Fighter universe, like you just said, Phil. Mm-hmm. Some of the characters in 4, I didn't feel that way as much for them.
Didn't think Rufus?
Yeah, Rufus and El Fuerte.
I thought Rufus was totally... Yeah, Street Fighter 2, you'd see
it. Yeah, so I like it. I think he's cool. I'm excited to see the rest of the new characters and their abilities and stuff. Like there's a whole new set of things to be excited for with every character, because not only do you get to see the character, you know, reappear from a past game or a new character, but you get to see their new abilities that are different from the other characters. You get to see if their, you know, their design has changed. So it's like, it's just cool to see. As a Street Fighter, a longtime Street Fighter fan, I'm very excited, and I'm glad that they're taking chances with the game, you know?
Yeah. And they ought to. This is a, you know, several decades old franchise, so, you know, people are ready to see the whole thing. I think people are ready to see the whole thing mature. I mean, 4 was the triumphant return, and it was basically celebrating everything that made Street Fighter 2 great, and I think they're going to give it another shot at doing something different.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, there hasn't been this many changes since the jump to Street Fighter 3, which was always a good thing, because we're at a time now where that will be more regarded in a positive light than it was back then, when the fighting game community and fighting games in general were dying. So I'm cool with that. As far as news goes, I think that's pretty much it.
Sweet.
Didn't even get an hour.
I didn't have anything else, I guess.
Yatsugarasu Attack on Cataclysm.
Yeah, so another fighting game I forgot to mention. This got released on Steam.
Yeah, July 7th.
Yatsugarasu
Attack on Cataclysm.
And it looks like it was made by guys who are from SNK.
Yeah, so this game, I saw this Indiegogo campaign a year or more ago for this game, and I remember looking at concept art and them showing off like the pixelated art and saying we want to stick with the kind of like low res look.
Stages look awesome.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what SNK was always the best at. On top of other things, but anyway, this is made by former SNK devs who worked on, I'm presuming, King of Fighters and Fatal Fury and stuff like that. I mean,
the concept art looks like something from Capcom versus SNK 2.
Yeah, so this game, I've heard good things about it. I haven't honestly got the chance to pick it up yet. I think I will, so I can talk more about it next week, but...
I dig the character designs.
Yeah, the character designs are cool.
There's a fine line between all-out anime bullshit and, like...
Blaze Blue.
Anime fighting game. No, it gets worse than Blaze Blue. It gets much worse than Blaze Blue. Like, there's all sorts of fighting games that are, like, just schoolgirls in school uniforms. There's a lot like that that are, like, kind of fun, but, like, it's just, like, a little too much moe.
I'm not a big fan. I'd rather they keep it simple and almost make the characters more relatable.
There was a Japanese fighter that came out on the PS3 this year, or maybe December, and it was reviewed really well. And it had some ridiculous bullshit name, like X4329BC Do Hoogaburger. And it, but it reviewed well because it had an interesting system. But all the character designs were so bland; like they were all anime school characters, pretty much. They're just anime people, like, you know, wearing like normal clothes. And one had a katana, they all punched each other. But like they weren't interesting at all. Like at least Blaze Blue tries to like, it's very anime, but you know, it's like Guilty Gear. They're over the top. They've got fighting game things. Like you don't see those characters in an anime. You see them in a fighting game, which is a very anime art fighting game. But like this looks like an SNK thing. It's got that anime style, but it's still, the character designs look like they have interesting fighting mechanics rather than just I'm a school guy.
Yeah, to me, it looks more like a fighting game than a anime transitioned into a fighting game.
Yeah.
Which is a good, in my opinion. That's what I like that more. I'm that's my opinion. So that game looks cool. If you're into fighting games and 2D fighters of old, then go check it out. It's what, $14.99?
I think so.
Something like that. Pretty reasonable. It's got some pretty archaic interfaces and stuff, though. But who cares? You know, the fighting's good.
It kind of adds some charm for me.
Yeah, I think so, too.
It's a cheap game. I'm not expecting much, anyways.
Right. So, anyway, that's what we have. It's a little shorter show this week. But we will be back next week, and hopefully some cool news will happen. Undertaker returned
at
last night's pay-per-view.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he came back, chokeslammed Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar.
Oh.
Yeah, chokeslammed him. Chokeslammed his ass right in the middle of the ring.
Good.
And it was cool.
Awesome. They released some photos of him looking kind of sickly. How does he look now?
I mean, he's old, you know. Yeah. He looks old. But he looks like a good, like an in-shape old guy.
Good.
But he still looks like an old guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. We'll see where that goes. I like Brock Lesnar. That's all that matters. So, that's what we have, folks. Should have told you this at the beginning of the show, but like our Facebook. That's facebook.com/pixelchickenpodcast. If you're on Twitter, follow us, and that's @pixel_chicken. Send us your emails at pixelchickenpodcast@gmail.com. And is there anything else? Any parting words from you guys?
Stay fresh.
So, stay classy.
All right. Thanks for listening, and we will see you, talk to you next week.
Yeah.
Peace.